Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Today we have a special episode for you with Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrell on secret operations in Antarctica and the UFO file. Dr. Farrell shares his insights on the recent push for UFO disclosure and how the deep state is hijacking the public narrative to create a false alien invasion threat.
They're up to something, and it doesn't have our best interest at heart, whether or not they trot out the Christ ET or whether they trot out the alien invaders. They're up to something.
Yeah.
So I don't trust anything that this government says.
Is deep state UFO disclosure enabling a false alien threat? Did a Nazi rocket scientist predict that they would do it? And what does this all have to do with Antarctica? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell. Joseph, it's great to have you back with us. Let's start with what they're doing here with the water.
When they have, this thing happened, the Tic Tac, and this new one where they have these beach balls supposedly attacking this, you know, Omaha destroyer, it's always off the water, it's always the Navy, and it's always during war game exercises, the Tic Tac and all that junk. Mm-hmm. So a war game exercise from under the ocean. But how are they doing this? UAP with under the ocean.
There have always been these reports of unidentified submerged objects. And they're fairly good, you know, things zipping along at speeds that no submarine can do. So I think something is going on under there. But I suspect one reason they're doing it is number one, that the oceans are still so unexplored that they can make it an easier sell for that reason. We don't have to believe that somebody is coming from, you know, Alpha Centauri and believe all of the things that one would have to believe physics-wise for that to be possible. They might be trying to trot out a narrative that this group, whatever it is under the water, has been here for a long time. And the second reason I suspect that they might be doing this is that the U.S. Navy, as you know, for years, for decades, has been involved in some of the most highly classified anti-gravity, exotic propulsion, exotic energy technology. Just think of SAIC, you know, and Bobby Inman and his connection with it, and Inman's very strange statements on UFOs over the years.
Yeah.
So they might be prepping another narrative. You know, we're dealing with the government and the deep state, so they're always prepping a narrative. Always, 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 as far as I'm concerned.
So, absolutely.
You know, that's my best guess at it.
Well, you make a good point, because one of the things, if they do go just for the space part on this,
right,
they get a lot more people looking up to space.
Right.
And if they're doing secret clandestine operations up there and suddenly the whole planet's tuned in, that's kind of a problem for them. But if they say, hey, you know what, these things are UFOs, they're coming from under the oceans, so therefore, we'll fight them, you know, we'll fight this invisible force. Maybe it's some culture that developed underwater, you know. So they can do this without getting everybody all hooked on the space.
Right. Right. Well, that's entirely possible, because, you know, the way I'm looking at it, they're rolling out such a financial, you know, they're calling it the Great Reset. I call it the Great Debacle. But anyway, they're trying. Well, that's what it's going to be. But anyway, they're trying to get all of this stuff going on in space, you know, mining asteroids and, you know, all of this stuff. And with everybody looking at it out there and what their financial plans are, it may be necessary to deflect attention back to under the oceans. You know, Daniel, I put nothing past these people. They are inveterate liars.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they will do whatever they need to do to ensure their agenda goes forward. And if they can create a UFO, USO, you know, unidentified submerged object crisis out of this, they'll do it.
Yes.
And that, you know, that will, that may be another deflection in and of itself. But there's another aspect of this that play, that may tie in here, and that's all of this weird stuff going on in Antarctica. So, you know, yes, maybe that's part of the narrative they're trying to prep. I don't know.
Joseph, you came out in 2015 and 2016 with a series of blogs around Antarctica.
Right.
Including all these high-level visitors. A lot of that work got plagiarized over time. But the real core of that work that you pointed out was, what were all these incredible people like the Secretary of State Kerry, Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, what were they all visiting Antarctica for? What kind of conclusions did you reach?
Well, I didn't reach any conclusions. You know, that list goes all the way, you know, to include Hermann Göring, you know, and
right.
What is that guy, you know, involved in this mix, and why? Mm-hmm. My speculation was that with Secretary of State Kerry in particular, he was taking time off of this diplomatic junket that he was on tour at that time during the 2016 election, and then all of a sudden we get the announcement, well, he's going to Antarctica and it's taking just a couple of days because he wants to check into climate change. Well, for crying out loud, you know, come on. He can pick up the phone and have all the data that he would ever need to see. So I suspect, given the circumstances of that trip, that he may have been conducting diplomacy down there. With who? I have no idea. You know, it could have been some secret meeting with another foreign minister, or it could have been meeting E.T., you know, who knows? I don't know. But to have that kind of level of a visitor down there after all the other strangeness going on down there, it says something. And, you know, shortly after that visit, Daniel, that Sultan Erdogan in Turkey decides he wants Turkey to be involved in Antarctica. And we had all those strange stories of the Russian the Russian scientific ship, the Vladivostok or something or other, that was going down to Antarctica, but it was making a stop in Saudi Arabia first, you know, just strange stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I've got to think something's going on down there out of the ordinary. What it is, I have no idea.
Fascinating. Something like the Piraeus map.
Yeah.
For example, that Turkish map, which harkened back to a much older map, and showed Antarctica completely, you know, without ice and green.
Right.
Does that give us a hint? Or does the presence of Buzz Aldrin, who is a former astronaut, give us a hint? I mean, we're looking at an ancient civilization or a crashed spacecraft.
It could be either. You know, the problem with Antarctica is, I think it's the one place on planet Earth that is the most obvious contender for Atlantis. Because it's a continent underwater, quite literally. You know, it's got lots of ice. They have discovered fossilized remains of plants there. You know, so apparently at one time it was in a relatively temporal climate. How it got down there, or, you know, we don't know. But it could be almost anything. And given the other strange stories, you know, the Russians a few years ago had all that strangeness surrounding Lake Vostok and, you know, basically locked the whole thing down and were not talking about whatever it was that they were doing. You know, it's just all strange. And, you know, add Hermann Göring to the mix and sponsoring this expedition to Antarctica to get lubricants from whaling oil.
Wow.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. You've tracked the Antarctica story.
Yeah.
The Nazi aspect of it. And we have Bird in your research actually training the Nazis about what to do when you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he makes his own expedition down there, which is very strange when you read his remarks about it, that, you know, we've conquered Antarctica, and he lands Operation High Jump lands everywhere in Antarctica, and they they start to press inward on the continent toward the South Pole, but he lands everywhere but where the Germans landed.
Interesting. You
know, I mean, just little ongoing oddities about the place that make no sense, you know, just make no sense. And then you've got that strange incident with Rudolf Hess after he flies to England. He meets with a high British commissioner. I forget the guy's name right off the top of my head. And the commissioner says, well, we want to talk about Norway, which I think is code for we want to talk about Antarctica, because Norway claimed the very same area that the Germans claimed. You know, on and on this goes.
What's the kind of technical, well, the whale thing is one, but what's the technical rationalization for the Nazis going there versus why you really think they were going there?
Well, the technical rationalization makes sense. Germany did need lubricants. And, you know, that was one of the official explanations. But they went there, and none of it makes sense to me. They went there with a seaplane tender, the Neuschwabenland, which is what they also named their staked territory. And this was hardly adequate to establish where the fishing zones were. And they spent most of their time overflying the continent with these aircraft, taking pictures and so on and so forth. They made certain discoveries of thermal pools that were warm, you know, things like this. But they obviously weren't looking for whaling grounds to get lubricants. You know, they could have asked the Norwegians and they would have been perfectly happy to tell them, you know, fish here. So there's something about this that doesn't make sense. And then Goering puts in charge of this expedition a fellow by the name of Helmut Voltat. And if you dig around who Helmut Voltat was, he was also Goering's personal envoy, along with a Swedish guy by the name of Dahlerus, to the British in the immediate days before World War II, that Goering was trying to head off a war and negotiate with the British and so on. So, you know, this Voltat character is not a fly-by-night. He's, you know, he's somebody that Goering trusts. And for him to be put in charge by Goering personally of this expedition tells me that there's a lot more going on. It's got some sort of geopolitical stake that we haven't yet learned. You know, it's all question marks, Daniel. It's all question marks.
No question about it. I find it fascinating that they would get Byrd on their team, having known his expertise with it. But also Byrd, when he goes back for that high jump, that's late in the game. That's like 1947?
Late 46, early 47. And it's an expedition outfitted for about a six-month stay. It's an enormous expedition when you look at what the resources that we committed to it. And then he pulls the plug on it, you know, after a couple months and skedaddles. And, you know, people have to understand that when that expedition was being planned, guess who was involved? Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz, you know, the American Naval Chief of Staff. Now, that's as high as you can go as a flag officer in the U.S. Navy. Right. So this is not an expedition they were playing around with. The other person personally involved was, guess who? Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So again, this whole expedition is planned at such a high level that it makes me wonder, just why are we sending a military expedition down to Antarctica with an aircraft carrier, two submarines, a destroyer flotilla, and a battalion of Marines? You know, that's not small. And we're doing this right at the beginnings of the Cold War. This is an enormous expenditure of funds. And it's an enormous effort in men and material. And the explanation we're given is that we need to learn how to fight in Arctic regions. We've got Canada and Alaska that they can, you know.
Yeah, you can train them there a lot easier.
You can train them there a lot easier rather than sending people, you know, that whole flotilla 8,000 miles to the South Pole. I mean, None of it makes any sense, Daniel.
Wow. Bird, when he comes back, he makes a lot of strange comments about the trip. The trip is cut early, like you said, which is weird anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the implication is when he got there, they saw a number of flying discs. They turned around and got out of there.
Well, they saw something. He gives this very – they had a press corps with them, and one of the reporters with the expedition was a reporter for El Mercurio de Santiago, Chile, you know, the Mercury newspaper from Santiago. And according to that story, Byrd says, well, the United States has to prepare itself against enemy fighters that can fly from pole to pole with tremendous speed. Now, there's a lot of people that fault me for my translation of that. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I put the original article of El Mercurio in, I think it was Reich of the Black Sun. And you can read what he says in the original Spanish version of the article. And that's basically what he says. What he doesn't say is flying saucers. He says enemy fighters that can fly. Well, who's the enemy?
Yeah.
You know, that has that kind of capability. The Soviet Union? No, they didn't. We didn't, unless you count the B-36. We don't know what the Nazis in Argentina were playing around with in full detail. So we don't know. Who's he referring to?
Yeah.
You know, he's referring to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. Enemy fighters. Well, what would make you turn around, first of all?
Yeah.
So something certainly strange happened. And his raw explanation before they shut him up was, we've got a problem. We're going to deal with these enemy fighters from pole to pole. That's going to be the next world war, basically.
Right.
Byrd, he becomes quiet on that afterwards.
Well, he gives one interview on the old Longines. I forget what it was called, Face the Nation, that Longines, you know, it was very, very early Face the Nation. You can find it on YouTube, actually. And he gives this hour-long show after he returns. And basically what he says there in that hour, he doesn't mention anything about the El Mercurio article. He just simply references, well, we've got to be prepared to fight on all fronts. And, you know, this was a necessary expedition. We learned a lot of stuff, you know, the usual boilerplate. And then, yeah, after he does that, he writes his National Geographic article, big long thing about a high jump, and then you never hear from him. You know, he just is shuffled off the stage, and so is Operation High Jump with him. And the next time you hear about him is when his nephew,
his son,
is invited to give a talk about Operation High Jump, and he doesn't show up in D.C. He takes the train. He doesn't show up in D.C., and they discover him later dead in a warehouse, an abandoned warehouse in Baltimore, Maryland, under highly suspicious circumstances that they start investigating as a homicide, and then that case disappears.
So, I remember this. This is a weird case if you read the articles too, because he goes down in one set of clothing and they find him in another.
Another, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just hanging around kind of mindless. Right. And according to reports of people who'd seen him, and then he turns up dead in a warehouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing about it makes sense. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, Daniel, you look at the whole Antarctica pie whole. You've got this strange list of people: Buzz Aldrin, Secretary Kerry, Hermann Göring, Rudolf Hess, King Juan Carlos, Prince Harry, you know, just the list goes on and on of people that have gone down there for whatever reason. Admiral Byrd. And there's all of this strange stuff associated with it, including a suspicious death.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's going on? I don't know.
You pointed out the Russian Pope went down there also.
The Patriarch, yeah. The Patriarch Kirill went down there ostensibly to bless the Russian Orthodox chapel in the Russian community down there. Wow. They built this little church, and then you get the patriarchal photo op with the penguins, and I'm thinking, okay, all right, the patriarch of Moscow and all the Russias, you know, to give him his official title, goes down to Antarctica to bless a chapel. Well, anybody can bless a chapel. A priest can bless the chapel. A bishop can bless the chapel. Why do we drag the patriarch?
You're right, right.
And that was right after or before he and Pope Francis signed this declaration in Havana, Cuba. So I'm wondering, okay, this is another John Kerry junket then, you know. Right. We're going to take a little detour to Antarctica. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry. Wow.
In Cuba, of all places.
In Cuba, yeah.
You go to the hot zone, to super frigid there in Antarctica. Yeah. Bird has a cousin, as we've discussed, and something that we put on the map, mm-hmm. who his name was D.H. Bird, or Dry Hole Bird, as they called him. Mm-hmm. And his cousin owned the Texas School Book Depository. There's a mountain in Antarctica that Admiral Bird named after Dry Hole mm-hmm. Bird. Mm-hmm. There's always been a lot of strange things about Dry Hole Bird because, one, he owned the Texas School Book Depository. It's a little bit interesting.
Oh, that's highly interesting, if you ask me.
And he gets involved with this helicopter company called LTV. Mm-hmm. And they're worth nothing, like $3 million at the time before the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
Then he invests in it, and that initial investment that he makes returns over $55 million in 4 years. And so Professor Scott actually pointed this out with D.H. Bird. But the location of the Texas School Book Depository and the fact that D.H. Bird had started the Civil Air Patrol, which Lee Harvey Oswald, when he was 15, is a part of, we have a lot of things there that connect directly into this Antarctica story. And he even has a mountain named after him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, you know, let's connect all the dots here. There's Kennedy's order to the CIA to turn over all their UFO files so that we can share whatever is not of national security interest with the Soviets. You know, right. during all of that fracas, and then you have the Texas oilmen Hunt and Murchison having that back channel private intelligence network, which turns out, again, according to Peter Dale Scott, is connected with Reinhard Gehlen and his little group of Nazis in West Germany, you know, running their intelligence inside the Soviet Union. So we've got Antarctica, we've got Kennedy, we've got UFOs, we've got Lee Harvey Oswald and the birds, and they're all in this stew.
I was reading the original Project Paperclip book mm-hmm. by Clarence Lasby, mm-hmm. and he goes into Walter Dornberger.
Uh-huh.
And whenever they get around Dornberger, it's always weird because he's the head of Bell Aerospace. Mm-hmm. He is Michael Payne's, overseer in a sense. Mm-hmm.
Michael Payne is his protege there at Bell Aerospace.
Mm-hmm. And Payne and his wife are hosting the Oswalds.
Yeah. I know. It's just bizarre. I mean, Daniel, we couldn't make up in our wildest dreams a movie script like this.
Incredible.
It is incredible. So all of this tells me there's something going on in Antarctica. Is it UFO related? Very possibly. Don't get me wrong, folks. I'm not one of these. The Nazis had a secret UFO base in Antarctica, and this is who is running the show. No, I'm not in that camp. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But there is something, I think, UFO related to it, possibly, and that you can't ignore that possibility. You know, again, Secretary Kerry going down there during a diplomatic junket. So even if there's nothing going on, They're prepping a narrative. At the minimum, they're prepping a narrative.
And they could be prepping the narrative of, oh, humanity's origins are totally different than we thought, you know?
Really?
By the way, we found this, like, ancient spaceship, and that means our culture owes itself to the Mars god. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can completely see them trying to, because one of the interesting things I find about the CIA part when I dig into it is they seem to have a problem with Christianity.
Oh, they'd have massive problems with it.
Yes. It really gets in the way of their plans.
It really gets, it's really the fly in the ointment that gums up the works. But, you know, that's always been kind of my point of trying to do these books. You know, why does someone in patristics all of a sudden get interested in this stuff? Yeah. Because I could see it coming. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it in a nutshell. And, you know, there's been this effort to say all this alien stuff and Mars ruins and so on and so forth disproves Christianity. Well, if it disproves Christianity, it disproves a hell of a lot of other religions too, you know, right. Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, you know, on and on we could go.
Wicca.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, you know, and I take the opposite view. I don't think it does any such thing. You know, I take those ancient texts, including the biblical texts, you know, that there was war in the heavens, literally. And, you know, you don't have to look far and wide in Roman or Greek mythology or Egyptian mythology or the Vedic literature or anywhere else to see that, you know, they all say the same thing. There was some sort of war of the gods that, you know, upset a heck of a lot. And that, to me, I think is really what they're afraid of, is they're trying to push this agenda. And we were talking about it before we got started on the recording.
That's absolutely right. It's interesting with groups who manipulate this kind of information, because they can use either side. They can scare right. you and use the right. fear side and say, oh, these right. evil aliens are coming for you. We're defending you. We're spending all this money. We're here. Right. Or they can turn that whole thing around and say, hey, here comes Space Christ.
Yeah, exactly. They can stage a fake second coming. You know, there's any number of ways that they can play this. And that's what bothers me about this whole thing.
Yeah.
It, you know, again, we're dealing with the deep state. So do you trust them if all of a sudden they make some grand announcement? Color me highly skeptical.
Let's talk about this for a minute. Sure. We've been going through, I want to jump back to Dornberger when we're done too, because I have one thing there.
It's always the Nazis.
Well, we came to the right place.
We came to the right place.
Speaking of Nazis, the CIA put a number of people forward to promote this alien threat idea and the UAP. They try to rebrand the thing UAP. A lot of those people, they funneled through TTSA, which has been on rocky, rocky ground ever since they launched it. And some of those people, career CIA people, Jim Semivan, Lou Elizondo, and all the rest. So it seems like at a certain point, they got kind of embarrassed by some of the people. And they were like, we're going to take these two guys, Chris Mellon, mm-hmm. intelligence for Bush, W. Bush, and Lou Elizondo, counterintelligence, 3 decades, mm-hmm. CIA, worked for James Clapper and John Brennan. Mm-hmm. We're going to use them as our main spokesman. So after stumbling around for a while, they bring these guys out, and now everywhere you go, George Stephanopoulos, 60 mm-hmm. Minutes. Mm-hmm. All the traditional mainstream media channels, they love the UFO topic after ridiculing it for years. Mm-hmm. They're pushing it hardcore. But they're pushing it under this UAP task force, which is supposed to bring forth a report in June and give us UFO disclosure. And Lou is the whistleblower. He's bringing the truth. He's got to get that stuff out of the government, except he worked for the government for 3 decades. What's going on here? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing another attempt to prep the narrative. let's assume they come out with some big grand announcement.
Right.
And we've got conclusive proof that there are ETs and they're visiting us. Okay, let's assume that they do this. I go back, and I'll be honest here, Daniel, watching all this, like you, watching this marketing op gin up and you know, get out there in everybody's face. You know, you and I both know that the government's interest in these things began during World War II.
Yeah.
If not earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way that you can examine the UFO literature, the credible literature, and come to any other conclusion. For crying out loud, they started Project Blue Book in the 1950s.
Right.
You know, Ed Ruppelt and his case for the UFO, and so on and so forth. So the government's been involved in this, and they have been monitoring it since then and making sure that the narrative stays, you know, within certain carefully defined parameters. So I have to question why all of a sudden the big marketing op.
Yeah.
And as a result of the big marketing op, Daniel, I've become increasingly skeptical of the ET narrative, because they're up to something and it doesn't have our best interest at heart, whether or not they trot out the Christ ET or whether they trot out the alien invaders. They're up to something.
Yeah.
So I don't trust anything that this government says. And, you know, they're doing this, I think, as a result of the COVID plan scamdemic kind of blowing up in their faces.
Yeah.
And I've always suspected that there was some sort of genetic tagging and marking thing going on with this operation that may or may not be directly related to this whole UFO thing. So who knows? But I'm extremely skeptical ab initio of anything the government may or may not say when this big deadline rolls around.
Well, this is amazing that people around the UFO subject suddenly love the government.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And they all chatted with the CIA, and they're like, the CIA is going to give us those files, and this is great, and I can't wait for June. It's like, you know, their whole entire field is based on the fact that the government blocked them on this issue.
Right.
Bump people off who are interested in it, like Morris
Chandler. Right. Right.
Why do they think that they're going to get anything from them now?
Daniel, I'm as mystified as you are about this sudden change of attitude and philosophy within ufology. I am totally mystified by it, because you know the kind of people that gravitate toward the UFO thing. They tend to be, you know, vegan, new age, loosey-goosey spirituality, and they're probably suffused with a lot of anti-vaxxers, and, you know, all and on we could go. And what I wonder is precisely the same thing. How do you do that epistemological flip-flop in 24 hours just because somebody goes on Tucker Carlson or what have you, and is talking about it and is, you know, CIA. Folks, wake up. These people are inveterate liars.
Yeah.
If they're going to do anything, cough up the proof. Make the physics arguments. Show us an ET body and let us do an independent scientific panel on it. Don't just release a few documents, because you can fake documents, you know.
Absolutely.
And on and on we could go.
No,
so
not it.
Color me skeptical. This Daniel, everything that we are seeing right now to me has deep state written all over it.
It reads like a deep state alien invasion op, and it's coming on the heels of the COVID op.
Right. Right.
That's one hell of a timing.
Yeah, that ain't it just coincidental that it's following on the COVID thing.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I think COVID turned out to be a big bust for them, because too many people started, you know, like all of these narratives get they get raked over by the alternative research crowd, which I think has put a big fly in the ointment of their plans. Mm-hmm. So now they've got to roll something else out.
Right.
And, you know, let's just look at space for a moment and the financial system. When the bailout hearings happened in 2008, immediately the alternative research crowd started pointing to the derivatives and came to the conclusion that there is, what, $14 to $17 quadrillion worth of derivatives sloshing around inside the financial system. That's the conservative estimate, $14 quadrillion, which is multiples more than the entire gross domestic product of the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big. And then a couple years later, we get the story about asteroid XYZ or asteroid ABC out there in the asteroid belt, which is mineral rich to the tune of, oh, guess what, folks, $14 to $17 quadrillion.
Wow.
So, you know, there's something space-related going on here with all of this. And if they want to press this marketing op, they could easily turn this into a commercial war, or they could turn it into, we've been contacted by ET, and they're here to make all of our financial woes disappear. All we have to do is get our jab, wear our masks, behave Perfect. Like good little boys and girls, and you'll get your stimulus check.
Right.
You know, I mean,
wow, the UBI.
Yeah, the UBI. Yes, exactly.
Just stay at home.
Just stay at home.
Stop breathing our air, will you?
Stop breathing the air. Yes.
This is fascinating, though, because we've had so many initiatives like SpaceX.
Right.
Bezos just got $10 billion from the government for Blue Origin. Like, he needs it, this guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're including him in the funding now for space. Mm-hmm. And guess what? After 50 years of doing nothing about the moon, hey, we're going to set up on the moon. We're going back to the moon. No explanation of 50 years off.
No, no. And so, they want to open up. They want to open up 5G networks on the moon.
Wow. What is that all about?
Commerce.
Yeah.
Commerce. And, in my opinion, keeping everybody who may go up there under a nice tight lid of control.
Ah. Mm-hmm. So if you see those actual ships going by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want anybody getting into their noggin the Robert Heinlein, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress scenario. Do you know that book by Heinlein?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what happens? The moon revolts. They set up a mass driver, and they're going to bombard the Earth with asteroids. Oh, does that sound like Dr. Carol Rosen?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. Heinlein, a lot of those guys really, you know, Asimov, they understood something about space that was coming in. Mm-hmm. They were looking down the road and seeing we're going to get into trouble on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a huge deficit of understanding.
Yeah.
So they roll out this guy, this Harvard astronomer, Avi Loeb. And he said, Oumuamua was a spaceship. It was programmed to come in here and observe us. He's the first high-level guy. His office is like two blocks from here. we'll go visit him at some point.
I'm sure.
I'm sure he has all kinds of interesting ideas. That's one hell of a book, but
yeah, it is.
It's one hell of an op too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this fits in exactly with what you just mentioned, which is Carol Rosen, mm-hmm. and that brings us back to this Dornberger thing. Let's do this for a second. Dornberger, who is a Nazi war criminal,
mm-hmm.
who is, as you've pointed out, he was actually facing judgment at Nuremberg for crimes against humanity.
Yes.
So he was going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to be executed for his crimes. He's spared by the efforts of...
Well, Wernher von Braun.
Yes.
And John J. McCloy.
Yes.
Who was the High Commissioner for Germany at the time.
Right.
And pardons over 70,000 Nazis. 70,000.
70.
Yeah, 7000. You know, and you know, a lot of the people that he pardons either make it over here into some of our paperclip programs, or they end up being part of Chancellor Konrad Adenauer's first federal cabinet in West Germany. You know,
oh wow,
go figure. You know,
we're back in business.
We're back. You know, Chancellor Kurt George Kiesinger, I think the third or fourth Chancellor of West Germany, he had worked for Goebbels' propaganda ministry, for crying out loud. You know, so yeah, Dornberger is right in there because he knew, as did Werner von Braun, the extent of the slave labor that was being used at Nordhausen and some of those other places in Germany that were producing their rockets. So, you know, and then he ends up as a vice president for Bell Aerospace.
Wow.
It's incredible history.
He gets pulled in, and his specialty, obviously, as I understand it, von Braun is his protege.
Yes.
So his specialty, rockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dornberger worked for the Heereswaffenamt, the Army Ordnance Bureau in Germany, and he was in charge of the development of rocket artillery. So, you know, Dornberger pulls von Braun in, you know, right away. So that relationship between the two of them is very, very tight.
Interesting.
Very tight.
You know, it's fascinating. I had Russell Targ on this program. Mm-hmm. And we did a deep dive on it, and he told me how von Braun had funded his first ESP machines because he wanted the NASA astronauts to have them.
Uh-huh.
And he revealed that von Braun's mother was very psychic and was known psychically to be able to predict things like earthquakes and so on, mm-hmm. Which gives us kind of an interesting wrinkle around von Braun and even some of the strange things that Rosen had to say about him when she was his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He made a series of predictions about how they were going to get us into these different war scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone from urban legend to playing it out in real time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's held up remarkably well considering he's been dead almost
35 years. Yeah, easily. Yeah, Rosen's affidavit has five phases that she alleges that he had told her, and I believe her. First, we're going to have to weaponize space first because of the communists, then because of terrorists, then because of nations of concern, think North Korea, then after that, asteroids, and then after that, ET. So if you look at where we're at now, we're in the asteroid phase.
Right.
And it looks like they're prepping the ET phase.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That threat is up there, and the media is telling you about it every day.
Every day, yes. Yeah. And here's the other problem. You look at what the media is saying. Are they offering any evidence, proof, or argument that their ET is threatening?
Right.
Now, I happen to think, yeah, they probably are, but for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Than, you know, watching a bunch of stuff on a camera and a gun camera from an airplane or what have you. Are they offering any evidence? No. They're just ginning up the fear.
Right.
And
absolutely. They want the national security threat because they want you in emergency powers land where they get to exercise COG-style emergency powers because there's an alien invasion.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, you've got the majority of people on the UFO side helping them do that.
Yeah, and let's go a step further. Suppose they come out and reveal, well, those ETs look exactly like us.
Right.
They've just got a different genetic code. And for us to know who they are or may be, we're going to have to get everybody into the DNA database. Yeah. And if you don't, you're a national security risk.
Wow.
And are they prepping that narrative? Yeah, they're prepping that narrative.
Well, this is the amazing thing that I've noticed with Mellon, Chris Mellon, who is the former defense intelligence guy who worked for W, Iraq War, you know, and he's also heir to the Mellon banking fortune and all that. And Elizondo, is they keep dropping in 9/11 references. And they keep saying, well, this could be the new 9/11. It's an intelligence failure. We need to get on top of it. The Pentagon won't listen to us. We're great whistleblowers and heroes. I mean, the Pentagon thinks anyone is a threat. You bicycle too close to the Pentagon and you're a threat. I mean, they're not looking at UFOs. It's an absurd narrative.
It's totally absurd. But the 9/11 thing I find very dubious, because what they're doing is they're playing off the 9/11 truthers.
Right.
What they're suggesting, ultimately, or implying, is we could have another such event, and it might be ET.
Yes.
And they're prepping that narrative very, very well, and that makes me think, okay, if you're prepping that kind of narrative, then call it a false flag.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing to me because they've been putting in a lot of 9/11 pieces. One of the things that Professor Scott is fond of pointing out is that every president signs into law those emergency powers gained during the 9/11, the 9/11 emergency powers, which include NORTHCOM and continuity of government and all that. Now, whether it was Trump, Obama, W, or this guy. And I use the term president loosely there.
I always put an asterisk when I say behind the word president when I refer to Biden and co. And I call him that because it's a wonderful Ukrainian ending to the name. So.
We're really stuck with him. That is a problem.
And
there's VP Harris. They sent her out there, by the way, to meet the South Korean president because I guess Biden was napping or something. And
well, it wouldn't surprise me.
What year is it?
What year is it?
We have to make sure that Carter gets in.
Yeah, it's about that bad.
I'll debate Reagan anytime.
I'll debate Reagan anytime, anywhere.
The 9/11 thing, this is interesting. So they're using the language. Earlier this year, they started using that language to try to get this domestic terror bill passed. And instead of, you know, the enhanced interrogation for people who they suspected would be Muslim terrorists, like they did in 9/11, it would be people who were suspected of domestic terrorism. So basically, if you said anything that the establishment didn't like, you're a terrorist and we can interrogate you and take away all your rights. That was one level of them using 9/11. And they started to use people, including Chris Mellon, who called for a January 6th commission for domestic terrorism. That's an interesting Mellon piece in here. But here's what they seem to be doing is taking that 9/11 piece of spying on citizens, moving it from just the domestic terror part, which is already a freaky thing to do, now moving it into the UFO field.
Yeah.
So now we have Elizondo parroting 9/11 style language. What is going on there?
Well, I think it's I think they're prepping a narrative. Remember back in the Secret Space Program conference in Bastrop?
Yes.
I mentioned that if they are concerned about ETs, they've got to be concerned about the possibility that we may be slowly infiltrated. Now, that's, you know, that's a meme that has been out there on science fiction shows and so on for decades. Twilight Zone did this, and, you know, you can Outer Limits did their version of it. You know, it's been around for a long time. But we now have the technology to sequence the genome in the field. You know, these portable sequencers that were brought out just a few years ago. So I have to wonder, again, is the real meme about getting everybody into a DNA database and so on and so forth? And if so, why? Well, E.T., that narrative of an E.T. among us in disguise would be the perfect way to do it, because they can claim it as a national security threat. And, you know, it would suit their purposes. Oh, we've got a bunch of ETs, and they look just like us, so we've got to get everybody DNA tested to find out who's who.
Ah, wow.
Perfectly tailor-made for it.
So not only are you a Trump-supporting domestic terrorist, now you're an alien.
And an enemy alien. That's right. Oh. Yeah.
How desperate is the deep state to roll out this kind of, I mean, the UFO thing on this level, so that ABC News and CNN are like, we love UFOs.
Mm-hmm. I think they're very desperate. And I think the desperation, you know, I've gone around and around with people, Catherine Austin Fitz and so on, because, you know, we're sensing that they are desperate. And particularly in the financial community. I mean, they are plugging digital currencies and great resets and social credit systems like nobody's business. And I have to wonder, what's the source of the desperation?
Yeah.
Is it simply the financial system being in a mess that they created? Well, yeah, that's part of it. I get the sense that they're in a hurry for some reason, and that they've got to get all of this in place or their game is up. So why are they in a hurry? Is it because they do know that there's ET out there and ET's a coming and they've got to get everything battened down and ready? Well, that's one possibility. Is it because they want to create a deception operation and get everybody misdirected while they put into place their you know, world government? And
yeah,
you know, that could be another possibility. I don't know. But I do think, however you slice the pie, that the ET UFO problem is a part of their thinking and their planning, whether it be a deception operation or the real thing that they're trying to prepare for, I don't know. But either way, I think it's a part of their thinking.
Excellent point, which is, we're talking about the alien invasion op that the CIA is pushing and the deep state is pushing. But we know about the actual UFO issue, and that's a huge issue that they have been working on for 70, 80 years, trying to figure out, how do we handle this thing?
Well, in my view, let's go back to what my view has always been. I think after World War II, they were confronted with three basic strategic problems that they knew about. The Soviet bloc, what I'm convinced that they knew was the Nazis are still out there somewhere doing stuff, and we don't know all of what they're doing. And the third and the big one was, we've got a UFO problem.
Right.
And we don't really know who's behind it.
Yeah.
So what do? They created a huge system of hidden finance that they knew they would have to do in order to fund the black projects necessary to create the technologies to emulate, or to the degree possible, to emulate the performance characteristics of UFOs. In other words, they were playing gunboat diplomacy.
Right.
But they needed a lot of money to do it, over, you know, trillions of dollars over several decades. And what we've seen as a result of that is, once that system was put into place, President Truman was the one that did it. Once that system was put into place, that hidden system of finance grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. It took up more and more share of the federal and ultimately the whole financial pie. And that's where we're at now. That's where I think they are now. So they committed themselves, in other words, to a narrative at the very beginning of this financial crisis. And now the crisis is coming to roost. Mm-hmm. And they've got to go through with the plan, like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem that they have. And I think that this is the other factor driving this marketing operation. Because, again, if we're going to go out and nab asteroids, why did we send up our early space probes with all of those plaques and so on? We are coming in peace for all mankind. This is where our planet is. This is what we look like, you know, and listen to some Bach, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
you know, see, we can write music. But you know, so they did that, I think, Daniel, because they had the suspicion that there may be somebody out there, number one. And number two, that they had the suspicion that we might be going into territory that may be in their sphere of interest, so to speak, you know, violating the quarantine zone, as I call it.
Oh, yeah.
So they create these plaques. So now, in order to make the books in the financial system balance, you know, we've got that derivative problem in the quadrillions of dollars, we need to go out and mine that stuff.
Hmm.
What happens if somebody out there already has a claim on it?
Right.
So if they have the claim, we need to protect those assets, whether or not there's anybody out there, but we can't afford to take the chance that there aren't. So we all also have to protect whatever assets we're putting out there. Therefore, we need to weaponize space. And I'll tell you the way I think they're going to try and sidestep international treaties between nations that we're not going to weaponize space. Corporations can. So in other words, I think you're looking at the creation of private jurisdictions like the Dutch East Indies Company or the British East Indies Company and so on and so forth. Companies that are so powerful, they're responsible for the mining, for the commerce, and for the protection. They've got their own armies, they've got their own fleets. And what have we seen? The Pentagon has just recently created private armies.
Yes.
So there you go.
Unbelievable. So you'd have like the Bezos sphere, you'd have the SpaceX sphere.
Right.
And they would operate like independent governments.
Right.
And that's what they wanted to do here, incidentally, right? They wanted to throw away sovereign nations. Forget about that. Here's your corporate zone. We own the North America free zone. You know, you guys have the Australasian zone,
right?
And that kind of thing. The alien invasion op as a piece of this, let's say it's a setup for them. There's a few problems here because the Space Force thing is giving them a real issue. They just got rid of this major commander in the Space Force, and I think it's because he's a Trump supporter. Mm-hmm. But the alien invasion op is to give them the ability to say, we need a one world government to fight it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. We can't do this by ourselves. Now, here's the fly in the ointment. What's the one nation that has been adamant against the idea of weaponizing space and corporatizing it?
Russia. Yes. And that's, they bully Russia every opportunity they get. They're all over Russia.
Yep.
Yeah. We had Biden stumbling out there, kind of insane, being like, Putin is a killer, you know.
And Xi Jinping isn't? I mean,
there was a great scene in Congress where this senator from Louisiana, Kennedy, he was asking Fauci, he said, if we turn Xi Jinping upside down, is the WHO going to fall out of his pocket?
Kudos to Senator Kennedy. I like that guy. Yeah, you know, they've got to do this, and the problem is they're just not going to be able to get Russia to go along with it, I don't think.
Right.
Now, if Russia does, then it means they're cutting some backroom deals. You know, Russia's got their super rich. You know, they still have their nomenclatura.
Yeah.
So you know, it could be the case that they're going to cut some deals. But you know, why we would want to antagonize one of the two countries in the world that are capable of putting manned crews anywhere, you know, Russia and China.
Right?
Yeah. You know, why? Why? I don't get it.
There's a few weird clues. You're absolutely right. And, I mean, Russia has its own very, very deep UFO file.
Oh, yes.
Right up there with the United States.
You're right up there with the United States.
Yeah. So we don't know how far they've got with their understanding on this.
I suspect very far, because I'll tell you why. Back in the Andropov area, circa 1982, there was so much strange stuff going on in Russia. You know, you had that incident in Belokorovichia in the Ukraine where the UFO turned on a bunch of Soviet ICBMs and started the launch sequence.
Right.
You know, and the Soviet technicians are running around scrambling like mad to try and prevent a thermonuclear war, you know. And Andropov, if I remember correctly, Andropov, when he became the premier, got wind of this and issued an order to all Red Army, Red Navy, Red Air Force military forces to send all UFO reports to a certain office within the KGB that he himself had close personal connection to. So in other words, you've just turned the entire Red military into a UFO reporting bureau. And that's going to give you a heck of a lot of data, you know, in addition to whatever they were doing before that.
Incredible. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's unprecedented.
That's totally unprecedented.
And it shows how advanced Andropov was.
Oh, yeah.
He died very shortly in that presidency.
Yeah, he died, I think, within about a year and a half after that. And, of course, who was his protege? Well, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Yes.
You know, so not for nothing is Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev talking about, oh, if we get invaded, will you help us? And Gorbachev says, well, sure we will, you know.
Yeah, right. I love that Gorbachev lays that out there, meeting at the press club in New York, and Kissinger's in the audience, and he just looks like he's going to faint when he says it. But he puts it across, and he says he was totally serious and very intense when he asked me, will you help us? It wasn't a flyaway joke, and the people who were there just couldn't handle it, you know. But that's very telling little piece that's on the record.
It's a very telling piece. In addition, you have Dmitry Medvedev, remember, about a month before the Chelyabinsk incident, the meteor incident in Chelyabinsk back in 2012, I think it was, where Medvedev is on television talking about the necessity for the world to create an asteroid defense system, you know, create an international well, there's your world government, folks,
right,
to defend against UFOs. But then he goes on to say, and if we can't get everybody on board with this, well, then Russia's just going to have to build its own. And then he's asked, well, how are you going to take out asteroids? He says, well, we could use our missiles, and we've got other methods of doing it. And that other methods it's never clarified.
Right. Do you mind giving us a little more insight on that?
Yeah. Do you mind giving us a little more insight there, Dmitry? And no, you know. And then a month later, we get the Chelyabinsk incident.
Interesting. Yeah. And it is fascinating because we are seeing all these fireballs. There's this incredible fireball thing going on down around Florida, Cuba, Venezuela, way more than we've ever seen before. And I know we get into these meteor seasons and all that, and people are like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's just the regular meteor shower. This thing goes all year round now, and we're always hearing about it. So the activity is incredibly heightened. They are probably watching something out there in relation to this. And it seems like the people on the ground are like, oh, here's more incoming fireballs, but they're not giving them any information on it.
And in addition to that, just in this last week, there's an article about building a new Arecibo.
Right.
On the moon.
Wow.
On the far side of the moon. And I'm thinking, okay, who do we need to be talking to? You know, on the far side of the moon with a radio telescope.
Wow.
And what else would that telescope be doing? You know, again, everything's being focused on space and all of these vast development plans, and that's more money, and that's national security, and that's UFOs, on and on we could go.
Well, if we tie it back, and this is really interesting because the von Braun piece, we have to first imagine the kind of access that von Braun had. He has not only access to the early Nazi program, their knowledge of space. He's got access to the entire NASA Nazi second space program. He's in there. For him to tell Rosen these things and say, here's how they're going to do it, he's had access to those conversations. He knows what they're planning out decade on decade.
He not only has access and knows what they're planning out. Let me go back to my book, Secrets of the Unified Field.
Right.
When Morris Jessup wrote his book, The Case for the UFO, that apparently was read by Carlos Miguel Allende, who figures in the Philadelphia Experiment story.
Right.
And Allende annotated his copy of Jessup's book, sent that annotated copy back to Jessup. Jessup, in turn, thought it was the annotations were so strange that he took it to the U.S. Navy, to the Office of Naval Intelligence, which in turn had it printed up by a publishing company, the Varro Publishing Company in Garland, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. And that copy was a limited print, and it was disseminated amongst certain members of the armed forces. Now, in Secrets of the Unified Field, I show a picture of Wernher von Braun sitting at a table like he's holding court. And on the other side of the table, standing, are a bunch of civilians and military, and two of the Navy officers there are the two Navy officers that were responsible for the Varro edition being printed and disseminated.
Oh.
So it looks to me like von Braun may have been one of the recipients of that copy. So after that happens, then von Braun writes a novel. Remember that?
Right, yes.
Das Mars Project, the Mars Project. And in the novel, this is one for your wow list, folks. In the novel, he has a character that is more or less in charge of the Mars exploration. And guess what his name is? Ellen.
Yes.
Yeah.
As in Elon Musk.
As in Elon Musk. Yeah.
Wow. It's remarkable. We talked about von Braun's psychic abilities also, but this is almost like they created this role for this dictator on Mars. And it's interesting to go back and think about this book and what they were putting across. Because the things that were revealed in this Jessup piece go back to, like you were saying, the Tesla technology, the Philadelphia Experiment, Project Invisibility, that whole piece. Jessup stumbles into that. I found out something else about Jessup, which we can talk about now for the first time, because I've never talked to you about this. Jessup was best friends with J. Manson Valentine.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And Manson Valentine finds the Bimini Wall when he's looking for Casey's Atlantis Rising.
Yeah.
The two of that, I mean, that's probably a pretty dangerous combination, Jessup and Valentine. When I looked at that, I was like, no wonder they got rid of Jessup.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Jessup, professor of astronomy. He's not a fly-by-night UFO author. He's giving the whole thing credence, and they're like, you know what? The sci-fi thing is fine, but this guy has to go.
Yeah. Well, Jessup was very interesting because in his study of UFOs, he actually, I think, was one of the first people out of the gate to come up with the idea of solidified columns of air that would be completely invisible that would explain why he had so many airliners crashing and, you know, for no good apparent reason. And he came up with this idea that there was some sort of physics involved that would literally solidify, like a Jedi lightsaber, only he couldn't see it.
Interesting.
You know, he came up with lots of out-of-the-box ideas for the time and was just speculating and putting those out there as possible explanations for a lot of this stuff. And then all of a sudden he gets this copy of his own book annotated by someone claiming to be a part of the Philadelphia experiment. and who's talking about great bombardments using asteroids and wars, you know, and all of this stuff. And bang. They snap that up. So the war scenario, what I'm suggesting here, Daniel, is the war threat scenario entered their thinking in the Pentagon in 1947. Hey, we can use this.
Yes.
Whether it's true or not, we can use this.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a couple of different really interesting things right there. You often point out that what got this craze going, after all, is Kenneth Arnold. I have his autobiography around here.
Yeah.
Arnold, the things that he sees and that he reports look very much like the things that were created by these brothers.
Right, the Horton brothers.
The Horton brothers.
Yeah.
They don't look like saucers at all, actually.
No, they look like big flying wings.
Yeah.
You know, his own diagram, you know, I put in SS Brotherhood of the Bell, I put a picture of Arnold holding a drawing that he had made of what he had seen, which looks like this kind of big flying wing. And right next to it, I juxtapose a picture of the Gotha 229 Horton Brothers flying wing.
Right.
And here's one for you. Back in 2005, Northrop Grumman built a life-size mock-up of the Horton flying wing and went to the expense of painting it and so on with authentic era paints and tested this thing for radar stealth.
Wow.
And they discovered that that plane would have been 25% stealthier than any aircraft in the Allied or German arsenal at the time. So in other words, it would have been a little bit of a problem for British and American radar.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, the Horton brothers who designed this thing end up, guess where, after the war in Argentina.
Goes back to Argentina a lot.
We go back to Argentina a lot. Yeah, and they're building all this stuff for Juan Perón.
You're right.
Okay.
Kind of a sympathizer there.
Yeah, kind of a sympathizer there. Maybe that's why he took that tour of Paris with Hitler in 1940, but, you know, I'm just guessing.
Joseph, amazing information. And we'll do part two on this and find out if an alien war is being staged for us and just how far back does this plan for global control from space go. Of course, make sure to sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to get part two directly in your inbox this weekend. Of course, you can find all of Joseph's work at GizaDeathStar.com. We'll see you on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern for the X-Series. And don't fall for the alien invasion op. See you soon.